Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 5th Chapter, entitled Narada's Instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam.
Text 32.
Etat san suchitam brahmam tapadraya chikitsitam yadisvare bhagavate karma brahmi bhavitam eta this much Sansuchitam, decided by the learned. Brahma, O Brahma Vyas, Tapatraya, three kinds of miseries. Chikitsitam, remedial measures. What? Ishvare, the Supreme Controller. Bhagavati, unto the personality of Godhead. Karma, one's prescribed activities. Brahmani, unto the great. Bhavitam, dedicated. Translation. O Brahma Vyasadeva, it is decided by the learned that the best remedial measure for removing all troubles and misery is to dedicate one's activities to the service of the Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Purport. Sri Narada Muni personally experienced that the most feasible and practical way to open the path of salvation and get relief from all miseries of life is to hear submissively the transcendental activities of the Lord from the right and bona fide sources. This is the only remedial process. The entire existence is full of miseries. Foolish people have manufactured out of their tiny brains many remedial measures for removing the threefold miseries pertaining to the body and mind, pertaining to the natural disturbances and in relation with other living beings. The whole world is struggling very hard to exist out of these miseries. But man do not know that without the sanction of the Lord, no plan or no remedial measure can actually bring about the desired peace and tranquility. The remedial measure to cure a patient by medical treatment is useless if it's not sanctioned by the Lord. To cross the river or the ocean by a suitable boat is no remedial measure if it's not sanctioned by the Lord. We should know for certain that the Lord is the ultimate sanctioning officer. And we must therefore dedicate our attempts to the mercy of the Lord for ultimate success or to get rid of the obstacles on the path of success. The Lord is all-pervading, all-powerful, omniscient and omnipresent. He is the ultimate sanctioning agent of all good or bad effects. We should therefore learn to dedicate our activities unto the mercy of the Lord and accept Him either as impersonal Brahman, localized Paramatma, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It doesn't matter what one is. One must dedicate everything in the service of the Lord. If one is a learned scholar, scientist, philosopher, poet, etc., then he should employ his learning to establish the supremacy of the Lord. Try to study the energy of the Lord in every sphere of life. Do not decry Him and try to become like Him or take His position simply by mental accumulation of knowledge. If one is an administrator, statesman, warrior, politician, etc., then one should try to establish the Lord's supremacy in statesmanship. Fight for the cause of the Lord, as Sri Arjuna did. In the beginning, Sri Arjuna, the great fighter, declined to fight. But when he was convinced by the Lord that the fighting was necessary, Sri Arjuna changed his position and fought for his cause. Similarly, if one is a businessman, an industrialist, an agriculturalist, etc., then one should spend his hard-earned money for the cause of the Lord. Think always that the money which is accumulated is the wealth of the Lord. Wealth is considered to be the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, and the Lord is Narayan, or the husband of Lakshmi. Try to engage Lakshmi in the service of Lord Narayan and be happy. That is the way to realize the Lord in every sphere of life. The best thing is, after all, to get relief from all material activities and engage one completely in hearing the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. But in case of the absence of such an opportunity, one should try to engage in the service of the Lord everything for which one has specific attraction. And that is the way of peace and prosperity. The word sansuchitam in this stanza is also significant. One should not think for a moment that the realization of Narada was childish imagination only. It is not like that. It is so realized by the expert and erudite scholars, and that is the real import of the word sansuchitam. It appears that one part of the world is better than another part. It appears that it's better to be rich than to be poor. It appears that it's better to be young than to be old. It appears that it's better to be in charge than to be told what to do. All these things are apparent, quite obvious. And we act accordingly. We try to put ourselves into the better position. Oh, money, money, money. Somehow or other, how many people are endeavoring to rake it in? That is the nature of our position in the material world. Who wants to be old? Rather young and beautiful and so on. And so many things are done to stay young, to conquer old age somehow or other. But the fact of the matter is that these are only temporary gains, temporary solutions, and no real solution. It seems that we are doing good. We got some money, yes, but ultimately one has to die, and money really doesn't help in that regards. So money also is not the solution. It is not the real solution to solve unhappiness in life. Real unhappiness is only solved by taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. And then one can also be simple. Then one can be renounced. Then one can live a life of not requiring so many things. Still, there is suffering in the material world, and who wants suffering? Who's asking for it? Rather, we avoid. So it seems that some endeavors have to be made to remove troubles and miseries. The cowherd boys were also taking shelter of Krishna when there was a forest fire. When there are forest fires, one wants to get out of the way. When there is danger of wars, well, one'd rather not be in the firing line, and so many things. But ultimately, one may try to get away. But that's only going to work if it is sanctioned by the Supreme Lord. Something is done in the material world for our protection. When there's cold, we look for something warm. When there's hunger, we look for something to eat. Something is done, some endeavors are made in the material world to keep body and soul together, to stay alive, safe, and so on. And that is all right. But beyond that, why endeavor so much? Because these things are temporary. All right, we need some temporary relief. We need some temporary shelter. That is the nature, because we are in temporary bodies, and temporary bodies require some temporary things. But it's not the main thing. If we spend all our time just solving temporary problems, and we don't invest in our eternal position, then in the end we're going to miss out. Because in the end, when death comes, then everything will be taken away. Not only will everything be taken away at the time of death, but where will we go? What will be our destination? That is the next question. So if one has not invested in service to the Supreme Lord, then at the end of life, the destination is not auspicious. Therefore, one must do something for the relationship with the Lord. And when we are making arrangements for our temporary facilities for the body, then that should be done in such a way that it doesn't interfere with the eternal benefit, the eternal destination. In other words, the eternal destination of every living being is to go back to the spiritual world, back to Godhead. To get out of this material world altogether. It's not that if I'm rich, then I've made it. Then I've made it. No. Even then one hasn't made it. Even that's not good enough in the material world. Still in jail. Yes. Just like a rich man, when convicted by the court, may get better facility than a poor man. A poor man, they put him in a labor camp and give him a hard time. A rich man, they give him house arrest and he has to stay in his bungalow. But still, you can stay in a bungalow, but after a while, it gets a bit suffocating to be in the bungalow. One wants to get out. So that's also not good enough. It's not good enough. So to be rich is not good enough. We are still caught. Still caught. Everybody is caught. Everybody is caught. Nobody has what he desires. Nobody. Nobody is satisfied. Therefore, dissatisfaction will remain. So, okay, we take care of material needs as simple as we can. And then we make sure that for solving our material needs, no sinful activities are there. The example in our tradition is of the sage Valmiki. Valmiki, before he became a sage, was making a living by crime. What to do? That was the way he was operating. Crime. And then One day, Narada Muni came, and he said to this criminal, he said, you know, why are you doing all these criminal activities? Are you not afraid that one day you have to pay for it? He says, well, what can I do, you know, what can I do? I've got to maintain my family, you know, somehow or other. I have a family, it costs a lot of money. I got to make some money and, you know, don't have a job, so I have no other option than crime. He said, yeah, but you will get all kinds of reactions to this crime. In the future, you will suffer. He said, what can I do? You know, I have to maintain my family. He said, do you think, Narada Muni said, do you think that your family is willing to share in the reactions of all these criminal activities that you are performing? Of course, you know, I'm doing it for them. Yeah, of course. Of course they'll share, you know. They get the benefits and then they'll also share in the suffering. Narada said, why don't you ask them? And when he asked his wife, the wife said, sharing in the reactions of all this crime, no way, no. Said, you know, you are doing this crime. He said, yes, I'm doing it for you, to maintain you. He said, yeah, but that's, she said, that's your duty. You have to maintain the family. And how you do it, yeah, if you do it through crime, I'm not telling you to do that. I'm not telling you, no. I'm not sharing in the responsibility. Then he asked his children. They said, we are children, you know what I mean? He's like, we're not responsible for these things. No, you have to provide. It's like, you know, we didn't share any reactions to that. Nobody was willing to share. So then, you know, he got a little bit shocked and sort of lost interest in his family. He said, I'm working so hard for them, and what am I getting? Then Narada Muni told him, yes, Just sit down and chant the name of Ram. Just chant Ram. Say, Ram. I can't chant that. I can't chant that. Then our little, all right. Then you chant Mara, 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 Mara. Which means death, death, death. Now you could relate to that, you know. That's like part of his profession. So he chanted death, death, death. Mara, 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 Mara. And in the end, actually, he's chanting Rama, Rama, Rama. So he got purified and became a great devotee of the Lord and became the sage Valmiki. So we do so many sinful activities to just maintain ourselves, to get the money, somehow or other. A little cheating here and there, a little dishonesty. I mean, you know, just, well, nobody is using it. May as well take it. Yeah. It's just lying around. Take. Take, take, yes. Yes. But what about the reaction? Anything that we take that is not our property, there's a reaction. Pay. For anything, a reaction. One has to pay. At the end, there is a bill. At the end of life, there is a bill. Everything is on the bill. It's all there. Pay. 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 It was just lying around. It wasn't yours. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. It would have just gone to waste. Yeah. It wasn't yours. Now you have to pay. So like this karma, this law of karma is overlooked. It's not a problem to have material facility. It's not a problem. Of course, material things, they create relationships. Just like in the 11th canto, there is this thing where it says, why is it that the mind goes into the sense objects and the sense objects go into the mind? Or to say it even more simple, why is it that the mind goes into the things and the things go into the mind? It's like that. The mind goes into different things. And all these things, they go into our mind. My car, my house, my money, everything, my things. And we think about these things all the time. When we lock away some money, we lock away a piece of our mind at the same time. It's like that. It's just always there, you know what I mean? It's safe. It's in the bank. You know, can't be better. It's completely safe. It's in the bank. What if the bank crashes? One day you come to the bank, sorry, no money. So that doesn't happen. It did happen. Not so long ago, in the financial crisis. Or in some countries, there was the financial crisis in Greece, and people could not take out more than like 55 euros a day, even if you had like, you know, huge amounts in the bank. Could just get the minimum to buy some food. Yeah? Just for your basic expenses. Because if everyone, sometimes there is a fear. The bank is in trouble, everyone storms to the bank to pull his money out, and then that kills the bank altogether. So the Bhagavatam is putting everything in clear perspective. We can have material things, but because the mind gets involved with these material things, we have to be careful. Even if it's not sinful. Because if we have so many things, then our mind becomes very busy with all these things, and as a result, we cannot remember Krishna. We cannot remember the Supreme Lord. And when we cannot remember the Supreme Lord, then the result is we will not invest in our relationship with Him, which is the most important thing in life. There are many good people out there, nice people, who don't want to cause any suffering to others. They're nice. They want to do good for others. They give in charity when there's a need. They're basically honest people. Many, many honest, good people who try to be good people in the world. And that's very nice. The only problem is they're so busy with material things, they never remember the Supreme Lord. And then, at the end of life, that relationship hasn't been established. My mother, on her deathbed, I told her, now is the time to remember the Supreme Lord. Now's the time. She said, I have no faith. Yeah. Because the last time she went to church was to get married. And then she never went back. You know. What to do? Then no faith. See? Faith doesn't just develop on its own, just like suddenly all this faith emerges. Right? Faith comes from investment. If you want to have faith in God, you have to do something for God. Then you have faith in God. It's not just some people have faith in God, others don't. Faith in God, first of all, comes from being with people who have faith. It begins there. It looks different when one is with people who have faith in God. Suddenly one also begins to think, well, maybe there's something after all. Right? Whereas, you know, if we are with total materialists, then we forget. So faith, it begins with association, and then it comes from investing in that relationship with the Lord, in doing service for the Lord, in dedicating ourselves to the Lord. And the more we do so in our life, then at the end we'll have faith, strong faith, that He will somehow or other do something for me. Right? If you've done so much for the Lord, then there is no doubt He will do something for us. That's how it is. It's a reciprocation. And so if one has not done very much, then if he has this feeling, well, I don't know if He's going to save me. Oh, God, please save me. Today, if He will do it. I never did anything for Him my whole life. I'm not sure. Then there's so much doubt. So it's now. Now is the time to invest in our relationship with the Supreme Personality of God. And then everything becomes auspicious. Just like I have the story that one year we were in the Czech Republic in the summer camp. You know, 400 devotees in a forest somewhere. And there were seminars and kirtans and all kinds of things, and I had just finished my slot for the day, and I walked away from the class and the devotees were going for prasad. So, you know, I was sort of expecting to hear Sarira Avijaja, right? But instead, I heard suddenly, Namaste Narasingaya. I go, wrong song. What's going on? And something's going on. So I turned around and walked back to check out what was going on. When I came, there was a man lying on the ground, totally gray, sort of like looked really bad. And all the devotees are chanting the Nisunga prayers around him. And then he looked dead, you know what I mean? You can't sort of know he falls, it's, you know, totally dull. All when someone's dead, there's just no more he falls, it's just very dull. So he looked dead. I've seen it before, but he's gone. Anyway, a helicopter came in, and you know, the paramedics came running in and brought like equipment and gave him electric shocks on his chest, trying to revive the heart. Didn't work. The thing was, the temple president told us, like, when the paramedics were there, stop the chanting, yeah, because you know, it looked good. So all those devotees, right, they were quiet, but they were praying. And while the paramedics were trying to revive him, four other devotees were praying, let him die. Because it's the best now. Yeah? Later he'll be in the hospital, his family will take him away, he'll be again in a mundane environment, forgetting Krishna. Now he's here. Anyway, the prayers of the devotees were answered, the man left. That was it, you know. So then, you know, we started to find out, who is he actually? Who was this man? So we asked around, and someone said, yeah, he was one of my Sankirtan contacts, actually. I knew him for years, he would always buy books from me, for many years. Said, like, last year, he bought a Srimad Bhagavatam set, you know. So this year, I also, when I was in the town, I went to see him. And then he said, I finished it. So I thought, in 1 year, he read the whole Bhagavatam. I mean, serious reading. He's retired, but I mean, he spent his whole day reading, that was clear. And he said, I finished it, do you have any other books? Yeah. So we always have other books. So he got some other books. And then he invited him to come to the summer camp. Then he came to the summer camp. And there he got some beats and he was chanting. And I saw him. I'd seen him walking around Tulasi in the morning. So like that, say, like, this is amazing. Who was this man? And suddenly the whole thing became auspicious. It was an auspicious departure. It was not a sad thing. He died while dedicating himself to the Supreme Lord. Everybody's got to die, but if you sooner or later, but if you die in that way, oh, everything auspicious. There is no doubt. No doubt that one will attain a spiritual destination if at the time of death you're remembering the Supreme Lord. That's all. But abhyasaya yuktena citta sananya gamina paramam purusam divyam yadipara tuna, one must practice throughout his life. Then it's possible. So he practiced for years. He bought books. He seriously read the Bhagavatam. And then after, in the association of devotees, leaves the body. I mean, while they were chanting, he left. And after the paramedics came, and he was already finished. Katamurya, as they say in Hindi, dead. Completely dead. So that was another matter. So he had actually left in an auspicious way. So that is the result, that is a gift from Krishna. How we leave is not only written in the stars. It is written in the stars. Our birth, our life, our death, it's all written in the stars. And someone who knows the art can see. But it can change. It changes. And by the grace of the Lord, it changes. And one may leave in favorable association like this man, by the grace of the Lord. That was not karma. That was grace. It is by grace that one can leave in the association of the Lord. So by our service, we can attract that grace. That's really what we need. Kripa Siddha attaining perfection through mercy, sadhana siddha, attaining perfection through serious devotional service as a sadhaka. These two ways are there. It said, but this movement of Lord Chaitanya, it's a mixture of both. It's a mixture. On the one hand, we make an endeavor, and on the other hand, mercy. And said, and how to get mercy? He said, mercy is costless. The mercy of the Lord is costless. And yet, although it's costless, it can be attracted by service. That is the trick. It is costless because that mercy is greater than anything we can do. Therefore, there's nothing you can do that warrants attracting the mercy. So it's costless. It's nothing we have done that really is like equal to, in terms of an offering, to the mercy that we're receiving. So it's costless. But still, service can purchase Krishna. So we must purchase the Supreme Lord. Purchase Him. Do something for Him. That's what we see. Now, you know, they are talking about Mother Teresa slowly becoming a saint, right? Being recognized by the Catholic Church as a saint. And there's a process, you know what I mean? And she's going, her name is on a list and goes through a process, and then eventually she'll be declared a saint. She did something, right? Everybody knows it. Yeah? She did something. She didn't just live a comfortable life. She went down there to Calcutta, which is intense, you know. It's an intense place. You may not know Calcutta as well as I do, because I spent a lot of time in Calcutta, but I tell you one thing. I've seen the leper colonies, and I've seen them, you know, their noses rotted away, their fingers gone, and their toes. So they give them sandals, you know, so that they can walk. So they'll have these sandals, because without toes it's hard to walk. So they have these sandals which are strapped onto their stumps. And then some cannot walk at all, and they sit in little wooden carts, you know, sort of soapbox kind of carts. And the others are pushing them. Yes. And they wear little red caps, and they have a rattle, because they're contagious. So when they walk in the street, so like that, they walk. And everyone keeps a distance. And then I saw this leper colony living under Howrah Bridge. And it's like the bridge begins on the land and then goes over the water, a very big bridge. So under the part that was under the land, there was this community living. And then what I saw was shocking. I saw that one took a brig and just killed the dog. The dog was sleeping. It's like, bang, killed it. And they ate the dog. I came back later the same route. I had to go somewhere. 20, half hour later, whatever, I came back. They were eating the dog. No noses, no fingers. Intense. Just intense. She was helping those people. Mother Teresa, taking them off the street, giving them treatment, putting them in a bed that no one else would touch them. She was like doing so. Okay, we see some saintliness there. We see some sacrifice. She made a sacrifice. So I was in Calcutta giving a lecture. And, giving this Bhagavatam lecture, and at the end there's a man in the temple, and he asked a question at the end. So it turned out that he was a doctor in Calcutta, just a general practitioner. I have seen these doctors in Calcutta. Their waiting rooms are too small. The people sit in the corridors and in the gardens, bloody bandages and pus and all these things that, like, doctors deal with. And I saw them working from morning till evening, late night. These doctors, and they don't get paid very much. One of these doctors was there, and this doctor was saying that actually, you know, you are doing the greatest welfare work. You, devotees, you are doing the greatest welfare work. Well, in a sense, that is true, because these doctors, they are working for the temporary body, fixing up the machine. Not much better than a car mechanic. Yeah, basically, you know, changing some parts and keep the thing on the road. But what the devotees are doing is giving eternal benefit. So in that sense, what the doctor said was true. But then, meanwhile, I was looking at the life that the devotees had in Calcutta, and it wasn't like so austere, you know. It was like three luxurious meals a day, many programs where there was a feast again and again, right? You know, kind of comfortable. And so compare that to these doctors who just work from morning till night and say, yes, maybe this is the greatest welfare work, but we are not the greatest workers. Maybe these doctors